helping immigrants build new lives in Maine. Immigrants, people who were born in another country, make up a small percentage of Maine's population, about 4% or 49,000 people. Many of the immigrants here have settled as refugees, escaping war and persecution in their home countries. Many have professional training, but have a hard time transferring their skills to jobs in the United States. Language is a barrier, of course, but there are other obstacles for new immigrants as well, such as gaining access to capital and navigating the work culture in the U.S. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will discuss some of the services available to new Mainers, from English language classes to navigating the healthcare system to helping aspiring entrepreneurs. Improving the new immigrant experience in Maine. Next on Maine Calling. But first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. We have newcomers to our state from far-flung places: Congo, Iraq, Burundi, Vietnam. Hundreds of immigrants and refugees arrive here every year, all with different backgrounds and experiences, and all faces the challenges of learning to live in a new land. Often they come here with strong job skills or educational backgrounds, but they need help finding their way before they can thrive. Today, we're going to learn about some of the services in Maine that are here to help. In the studio with me, Julia Trujillo Luengo. She's director of the Office of Economic Opportunity for the City of Portland. Holly Lasagna is Health Promotion Manager at Healthy Androscoggin. And Elaine Nahimana is the Interim Director, Executive Director of the Greater Portland Immigrant Welcome Center. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you know anyone who has come here from another country? Have you been looking for ways to help them? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Thank you all for being here today. Julia, I'll start with you. I know that there is no typical immigrant who comes here to Maine, but can you paint a picture of some of those who are arriving in recent years? What countries are they coming from, and why are they coming to Maine?
Well, I think there is a variety of ways that folks make it to Maine. I would say around in the refugee community, I want to say since 2012 or so, our number one population has been coming from Iraq. There's a lot of people coming from the DRC and any other
Democratic Republic of Congo.
Congo, as well as Somalia. And then in other communities, I would think Burundi, Djibouti, Rwanda, some people from El Salvador are the most common, as well as the DRC and also Angola, I would say.
And fewer this past year, right, because of the travel restrictions.
Sure, that would be the truth about the refugee population. When usually we would be resettling around 600 refugees a year or so, I don't think the number has reached 150. So there's a significant change.
Elaine, when I introduced you, I said you're the Interim Executive Director of the Greater Portland Immigrant Welcome Center. This is a brand new center, isn't it? And it was your vision, your dream. Tell us about this.
So thanks for having me here today, first of all. The Greater Portland Immigrant Welcome Center idea came 3 years ago. And the idea was, how do we empower small immigrant groups who are little or not funded at all, but were doing a great work in the community, by allowing them to have some infrastructure to do their work. So it came out as co-working space where people can share resources, can collaborate.
And you've been open how long?
We opened officially on July 31st.
July 31st. So in the past month and a half, who's coming there? What kind of businesses, what kind of projects are people working on that are coming to your center?
So we have various groups. We have mainstream small nonprofits or businesses who come there. We have individuals who are having their business there. We have a photographer. We have a graphic designer, a web designer. We have a tax preparer and interpretation services, and different other small nonprofits, immigrant-led nonprofits. But also we have significant partners who have been there a while but are using the center as one of the partner in terms of outreach and developmental programs. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Holly, I know that the Lewiston area has one of the largest concentrations of immigrants and refugees in Maine, especially from African countries. What do you do to help this population in terms of getting health care, and why is that a specific focus?
Well, there are a number of different aspects to accessing health care. A lot of it has to do with what kind of resources you have, what you qualify for, who the providers are. My specific focus is on helping providers become culturally and linguistically competent in how they provide services. So you may have access to services, but if you are with a provider who does not have some kind of understanding of where you're coming from, they might not be able to provide the appropriate services for you. So there's a lot of work around mainstream providers helping them to be able to provide those services.
Tell us a story. Give us an example of something that maybe a few years ago would have gone wrong that now, because of the work that's being done in the community, goes right.
That's a great question. I think one of the things that that I have seen a lot of from my own experience is the whole idea of scheduling and timing. So we, as we call them traditional Americans, we know you've got a 2 o'clock doctor's appointment. You better be there at 2. You might have to wait for a while, but you need to get there on time. What I've heard from, especially from Somalis, is that when you went to the doctor, you went and you just sat and you waited. And you would wait as long as it took to get your appointment, and it was fine waiting. And then when you got to see the doctor, you would see him or her when you could. So it's taking a lot of education on both sides to make sure that people understand how it works in terms of
making appointments. So in Somalia, you wouldn't make an appointment. You'd just show up and wait.
Not necessarily. You would wait. And so people may show up later than they're scheduled to or earlier and not be able to get their appointment. And there is a lot of misunderstanding around that. That's one aspect.
Holly, is a lot of the work that you do around educating people who are not new immigrants about what resources are available, what advantages immigrants might have? I feel as though there's a lot of false information being circulated.
There is a lot of false information. I think a lot of it has to do with understanding, and certainly Julia can help with this, not understanding that many of the immigrants and refugees who have come to Lewiston were not settled there initially. So they're coming to our community just as anybody would. They've made a decision to come there. They may need more services in terms of language acquisition and understanding sort of the ins and outs of some of the administrative things that they have to deal with. So I think that that's one of the things that we have to pay attention to, and that really causes misunderstanding. I think some people think that a lot of the immigrants and refugees that have come to Lewiston have had very special treatment. And we're always continuing to try and let people know what the reality of the situation is. They're just like anybody else coming to our community.
Julia, follow up on that. Are you finding that in Portland as well, that there's misconceptions about the services available and who's paying for them and how it works?
Sure. I think that's a big component of the opening of the new office on May 1st is really how intentional messaging do we inject in order to really change that narrative that the immigrants and refugees that are here in Portland as well as in Lewiston are a unique opportunity for the city and the state. And many come with advanced degrees and with this really passion and willingness and desire to fit in. And as I always say, the pursuit of happiness is a universal value, and that's something that we as immigrants bring to these communities, and my office just has to take a crucial role in order to really leverage and enhance and build a pathway for that to really occur.
Elaine, I read an article about you in which you mentioned that at one of the jobs you had when you came here to Maine, people didn't treat you very nicely. Is that a universal experience among new Mainers, or was that, do you think, a specific issue that you had?
I think the specific issue I had, many people working at the same place I was working stay there and get to be used to that. Maybe I just got impatient and couldn't stay more.
So would you say that many of the new Mainers you know are treated well by the people who, that, as Holly said, traditional Americans?
So I mean, to go back to the question you asked, Holly, I think the understanding, if you look at the refugee population who are resettled by the federal government, there is funding to get them by until they can get a job and be it by their own. So this, and in Maine, everybody agreed that it's okay when it's the federal government paying. But when it comes to local government having to invest in those population, there's a pushback from the state, from some cities. The concept is immigrant integration is, at the end of the day, a local issue. Because immigrants are the neighbors, are the workers, are the co-workers, are the students in the schools, local schools. So I think it's a good to intentionally, as Julia said, to say we are responsible for that, and we have to invest in those populations too because they're part of our communities. So I would say that the point comes to who is paying. And a taxpayer in Maine could say, I don't want that, but I've heard some politicians saying that as long as the federal government paying, we're okay. By the end of the day, this means that there's an acknowledgement that those populations, for when they come in their first steps in the country, they need support. And it is designed federally that there will be support to refugee populations, but no support for the asylum seekers, for example, which is another conception.
Did you want to jump in, Holly?
Well, I just want to, underline what Alain was saying, which is, yes, there is some help initially when folks come to the community, but that we really are dependent on our own individual communities and the goodwill of the both the cities and the individuals who live there to help support this really important resource. You know, Lewiston has been getting population only because of the immigrants and refugees who are there. And as far as the state of Maine is concerned, this is an incredible resource.
Julia, let's talk about a new immigrant and what the most important steps to go through after, you know, we found housing. Is learning English number one? And if so, what's number two and what's number three?
Well, I would think if you're an immigrant who arrives in Maine and your English proficiency is not high, yes, your number one priority in order to live a successful and healthy life would be to learn English. But I think our goals for this year, at least in Portland, is just how do we continue to offer English language options that do not intentionally, unintentionally force people to have to leave a job in order to learn English and vice versa, because it's not as simple as someone may think it is, because if classes are offered, let's just say 9 to 11, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, if I have a full-time job, I can't access those resources. So how do we get more creative in order to allow people to really be able to take advantage of the opportunities that are there? I think if you're English proficient and your number one goal is to secure the best quality job you can possibly gain and secure. And I think for us immigrants, I think as Alain was mentioning in his first job, it's important to try to reach high because then we get into this cycle that if you have if you secure a job that is not, it doesn't align well with your qualifications, then the next job that you try to apply for looks at your job prior, and then you have this U.S. experience that it's a very difficult cycle to get out of. So I think I recognize that, and the office is trying to not only push for people to get more jobs, but also to get better quality jobs.
So if you've been a pharmacist in your home country, get a job in a medical field where you may be working with a pharmacist as opposed to at a hotel or a restaurant.
Absolutely. And I think once you are part of the immigrant story, you recognize how much of a big part of you your profession really is and how you identify yourself through that. So when you come to a new country, the fact that you have to in sometimes forgive or forget that big part of you, it's a big part of who you are as a human being. And it's important for us to be able to maximize those resources and those skills that people bring with them.
Alain, I know that many new immigrants are entrepreneurs. What kind of obstacles does somebody who wants to start a business face? Or maybe obstacles not the right word. What kind of things do they need to learn about American culture to start a new business that may be foreign to them?
First, and I go back to Julia's, what you said about language. Language is a prerequisite for everything, whether you want to get a job, whether you want to be an entrepreneur. But becoming an entrepreneur is even more complicated because you need to understand how the system works, what are the resources available, how do you get the necessary support and training on how to do things in America, how do you have a financial statement done, how do you build a business plan, how do you make your project bankable, what are the resources available in the terms of lending, and how do you integrate technology in the work you do. All these are things with newcomers that are very complicated to navigate, and for which a specific approach should be done and support entrepreneurship.
And is that the kind of thing you're hoping will happen at your center?
That's the kind of thing we hope to kind of catalyze a collaborative working on that, because there's a lot of existing mainstream organizations promoting entrepreneurship that unfortunately have no immigrant participating in the programs. So we need to bring more diversity in those programs by having a seat at the table and also design programs targeting the immigrant population.
If someone's listening to this program right now and thinking, I've got some time, I'd like to help, what can I do? What's out there? What can people do to help new immigrants if they desire to do so?
I think one of the things we keep talking about is language acquisition and their opportunities to be conversation partners. To help people with their language acquisition and also sort of culturally help them understand culturally what they need to know to be contributing citizens. So I would say that's definitely one place where people can help.
Do people come to your office, Julia, saying, I'd like to help, and what can I do?
Not yet.
Oh, really?
I welcome it. I mean, I know there's several programs in Portland and initiatives, whether it's Welcoming the Stranger or the American Friends program, that really are based on volunteers and this kind of partnership and alignment between a newcomer and a native Mainer and how they can really help each other to navigate through this journey and support. But if anybody is interested in helping, I'm more than happy to have them to my office and contact me directly.
All right. Well, we do have to take a quick break. This is Maine Calling. We're talking about services for new Mainers, immigrants to Maine. We're going to take a quick break. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Please stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Abbey Museum, Maine's only Smithsonian affiliate, open every day in downtown Bar Harbor and Acadia National Park. abbeymuseum.org. And the Maine Community Foundation, pleased to support Maine Calling, a forum for addressing issues affecting Maine people and the world.
On the next Fresh Air, on the anniversary of 9/11, first responder John Feel, whose foot was crushed by an 8,000-pound piece of steel at Ground Zero. He became an activist and lobbied Congress for health care funding for first responders. He says many have died from illnesses or injuries they sustained.
About 2,000 people have died because of their illnesses. They, too, are heroes.
Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public Radio strives to bring you news, information, and public affairs which provide a better understanding of ideas, events, and cultures around the world. The BBC has been a valued addition to our schedule in recent years, adding a comprehensive and global perspective to our news mix. Comprehensive BBC coverage can be heard during the overnights, starting at midnight and running until 6 a.m. Maine Public Radio brings you the world courtesy of the BBC, exploring the important issues and learning what the world is thinking, saying, and doing. BBC Overnights, here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, services for Maine's immigrants and refugees. With me in the studio, Holly Lasagna, who is Health Promotion Manager at Healthy Androscoggin. Elaine Nahimana, Interim Executive Director of the Greater Portland Immigrant Welcome Center. and Julia Trujillo Luenga, director of the City of Portland's Office of Economic Opportunity. We invite you to join the conversation. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. On the line with us now is Fauzia Musa. She is Health Promotion Coordinator and Community Health Worker at Healthy Androscoggin. Fauzia, thanks for joining us.
You're very welcome.
I understand you work closely with the Somali community in the Lewiston area. What are some of their greatest needs?
They have many challenges, but I think one of the most need that I consider to be absent, it's friendship with the new neighbors. After they arrive, I think 3 to 4 years after the refugee arrive in Maine and elsewhere in the United States and everywhere else, it's this constant absence of having an integration or friendship with their next door neighbors. And I think that absence of friendship, natural friendship, often hinders their progress of integrating and also learning the language.
So earlier when I asked what people can do to volunteer, you say don't do something formal necessarily, just reach out to your new neighbor and get to know them.
Yes, I think it's also healthy because many of those refugees do come with trauma before they come to the United States. So just treat them as human beings, just saying hi, you know, a smile on your face does help a lot because I noticed that Americans often walk on eggshells. They're scared to say hi to their neighbors or approach the new neighbors by always fearing of offending them. So I think both ends of the spectrum, each one is scared to say hi to the other. So I think I am encouraging the American-born to initiate the hi and say hi to their neighbors.
Mm.
So it's become an icebreaker.
Fauzia, tell us what you do through Healthy Androscoggin.
Well, my particular work at Healthy Androscoggin is childhood-led prevention. So I educate both the American-born and the new Mainer who comes to Maine to live here. So I currently finished 194 units about lead education and educated 129 families about lead poison, tobacco cessation, hazard and fall, substance abuse and misuse. So my job at Health in Chicago is not just limited to New Mainers, but it's for all residents of Lewiston Auburn.
Well, Fauzia, thank you so much for calling in today. Fauzia Musa is the Health Promotion Coordinator and Community Health Worker at Healthy Androscoggin. I'm going to start here with an email. This is from Pam. I've been an ESOL teacher to adults for 20 years, 16 in Maine. In my estimation, most adult English language learners thrive when their classroom instruction is paired with a community experience. I've developed a curriculum called Experiential English, which uses a fusion of language teaching approaches aimed to foster connections, improve language skills, and build cultural awareness. Julia, this is exactly what we were talking about before, isn't it?
That's right.
Just talk to people. We'll go to Chris in Hollowell. Hi, Chris. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, my name is Chris. And thank you, Jennifer, for this wonderful show. I work with an organization called the Capital Area New Mainers Project, and we organized this year to do precisely the kinds of things that your guest and the previous caller were talking about, to foster relationships between New Mainers and their neighbors. We have family mentor teams of American families who work with particular newly arrived immigrant families. So if anybody in the Capital Area is interested in getting involved and wants to have very direct and rewarding and personal experience, I encourage them to contact the Capital Area New Mainers Project. But I wanted to make a point, and it's related to the language that the emailer had mentioned. You know, we often hear criticism, you know, critics of immigration will say things like, well, you know, today's immigrants aren't like my ancestors. You know, they don't want to learn English. They don't want to integrate. They don't want to become part of American society. They're holding on to their traditions. And I would encourage people who think that way to consider how long it takes to learn a language and to learn a culture and become part of a community. You know, for my ancestors from Germany and other people coming from, whether from Italy or Scandinavia, oftentimes it was generations, you know, a full generation before they were fully integrated. I think today's immigrants are very much interested in learning English. They're very active. The folks we meet and that we work with are taking ESL classes. They're inviting people into their homes. They want very much to learn the language, to meet people, to be part of the culture here and to share their culture, right? Integration is a two-way street. We can learn so much from each other.
Chris, I want to ask you, the Capital Area New Mainers Project, if you have some sort of link or a Facebook page, I invite you to post that on the Maine Calling Facebook page. But I also wanted to ask, I think most people think of the Portland area and the Lewiston area as the place where most of the New Mainers are. Is there a growing community in the Augusta area?
There is. There's a growing community, and that's what our organization wants to foster. We want to create a thriving multicultural community here. The Iraqi community, as was mentioned earlier, has grown significantly since 2012. And so most of the immigrants, newly arrived immigrants, come from Iraq. But lately, in the last year or so, we've had more arrivals from Afghanistan and Syria in particular.
All right. Well, thanks so much for calling. Chris with the Capital Area New Mainers Project. I'm going to go to Mike, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Mike. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to make the point. I've, in a couple of different volunteer things that I do, I've had the opportunity to work right alongside new immigrants at both Furniture Friends down here in the Portland area and at Healthy Homeworks up in the Lewiston area. And I mean, the folks I get to know this way are they're impressive. Number one, you think about what it took to get here and what it takes to survive, even with, you know, whatever help we provide. These folks are not lazy. They're talented. They're a great addition to our society. And I know from firsthand experience working right alongside of them.
All right. You're nodding, Holly.
Well, I found that absolutely to be true, and I think everybody here could say the same thing, that they're interested, they're motivated, they've come, many of them, from very traumatic situations, but they are so looking and craving for connection in our communities and to understand how to be a part of our community. Fasia makes a very good point about just smiling to people when you see each other on the street. That's a large way to do it. But I found that my children went to school in Auburn, and there were many school kids with them who also were excited to get started and be a part of the community. And the focus on education in many of these families is very strong. So they really are such an asset.
Thank you, Mike, for your call. We'll move on to Abdi calling from Portland. Hi, Abdi. Go ahead. Abdi, oh, you know what? There it is. Abdi, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Great. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. So I have been in the U.S., actually in Maine, for the last 3 years, and I came from Somalia. And my first inspiration of an American life was back when I was 7 years old. American Marines came to Mogadishu, and actually, one of the Marines handed me a peanut butter, and that was the first test of me, like, kind of say, "Wow, this is wonderful, and I want to be this place, you know, at one point in the future." And I knew nothing about this country, the culture, and everything else. So I've been going to movies a lot, watching a lot of Arnold Schwarzenegger movies, and I picked up a lot of English, and that's how my English came together. And I was in Kenya for 5 years as a refugee and eventually moved to the U.S., not actually as a refugee, but I won the Diversity Green Card Lottery. And I came to Maine, and I lived with a white American family in Yarmouth, Maine. And Yarmouth has almost like no diversity. And I've been walking in the streets and found myself the only person of color. So basically, these people have been helping me through everything, from how to use the toaster, how to use the washing machine, how to use the laundry, and all that stuff. And it's been going pretty slow. And now, 3 years later, I feel very confident, and I feel very grateful that I have got to know so many things, and I have so many friends in the Yarmouth area, my friends, and that at first point I thought I was doing strangers, and they thought I was a stranger, but we got together and we've been talking about our lives, and that has kind of created a very strong friendship with me. So the point actually here is, I think even though I spoke English when I came to the U.S., I really went through some psychological problems in terms of assimilating in the U.S., and I think that's true to almost every refugee who arrives in the U.S. for the first time. It doesn't matter if you speak English, but that thing's always constant. That's what I think.
I so appreciate you calling. You're about to say it goes away when you become acclimated. Is that what you were about to say?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Elaine, when you listen to Abdi's story, do you feel as though this rings true for many people you know?
Absolutely. I mean, it was amazing to see a person when they just arrived. If you go to the life cycle of an immigrant, either a refugee or an asylum seeker, and you meet them when they go to the shelter, you meet them when they just arrived, they're still with Catholic Charities. I worked as a freelance interpreter at some point. And then you look at the same people 3 years later, where they can't even talk in the mother language to their kids. Their kids only speak English at that point. And people have completely changed, have new friends. It's just a transformation. And when people say that Maine is not welcoming, I would say I think Maine is welcoming enough to get people stay here, even though it is one of the whitest states in the United States. The percentage of people who leave is so small that people might find something here that will make the state welcoming.
And this 3 years seems to be the time it takes for many people to go from being completely overwhelmed to feeling.
It depends on the level of English speak in English proficiency uh-huh. people come with.
Okay.
It depends on the immigration status they come with. People may have different journeys, but at the end of the day, they thrive.
Abdi, thanks so much for calling and sharing your story. We're going to move on to Anita St. Ange, who is calling. She's the executive director of Portland Adult Education. Anita, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for the show. It's great.
Can you describe some of the services that you provide for immigrants and refugees at Portland Adult Education?
Yes, absolutely. Well, in 2017, last year, we enrolled over 2,000 immigrant students from 82 different countries, just to give you a little idea of the scope.
82 different countries, wow.
82 different countries, yes. And we teach, we have 50 English language classes, 6 different levels, and we teach from 8:30 in the morning until 8:30 at night in 5 different segments. So when you were talking earlier about people who are working, we have a lot of people who come in, they work during the day and they come in the evenings or vice versa. We have an English language lab for people who either can't make it to a particular class, or we have some people on waiting lists, and so that is available to everyone. And all of these services are free. We have academic programs. Last year, we gave out 98 high school diplomas. Some of those went through a more traditional high school diploma program. Others took what used to be called the GED, now the HISET. We have job skills classes. People come in and have very intensive. We have 2 different levels, people who have high English levels, and then people who have lower levels. That includes English as well. But we talk about the American work culture. We talk about resume writing, interview skills. They do mock interviews. We have amazing relationships with employers. We do financial literacy. And then finally, one of our programs is called New Mena Resource Center, and that is focused on professionals who are coming, foreign professionals coming from other countries who have, many of them have advanced degrees. So we have, in the past, we've seen doctors, lawyers, engineers, nurses who are working as janitors. And our goal is to work with both the students as well as the employers to get them to the highest level they can possibly achieve. understanding that there are licensing barriers and all other kinds of things, but we had a program.
Anita, we're having trouble with your call. You seem to be cutting in and out, but I'm hoping that you can put some information about the Portland Adult Education on the Maine Calling Facebook page. I really appreciate you joining us today. Anita St. Ange, Executive Director of Portland Adult Education. We do need to take another short break, but first, a look ahead at tomorrow's program. We're going to talk about the Equifax hack and what it means for you, and we'll also learn more about personal credit and finance. So if you have questions about protecting your information and your credit, even what a credit score is or how it works, you can email that question to talk@mainpublic.org. You can tweet us or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Freemasons in Maine, supporting Maine Public Radio's efforts to provide knowledge, wisdom, and entertainment to the people of Maine. And Lee Auto Malls, proud to support the Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument. Details on wildlife, thrill-seeking, and directions at friendsofkatahdinwoodsandwaters.org.
Since Hurricane Harvey, the National Flood Insurance Program has received more than 80,000 claims. Each claim needs an adjuster to inspect property. But the need to inspect quickly can bump up against inspecting accurately.
You want to make sure you see everything, because I don't want to write something and then they have to come back with a supplement.
Plus, the impact of Hurricane Irma this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
You can hear All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 this evening and each weekday evening right here on Maine Public Radio. And coming up in just a few minutes at 2 o'clock, Commonwealth Club of California. Today's speaker is Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein of California. That's coming up on the Commonwealth Club of California at 2 o'clock right here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today in the program, immigrants and refugees in Maine and how they can thrive here. Joining me today, Elaine Nahimana with the Greater Portland Immigrant Welcome Center, Julia Trujillo Luengo with the Office of Economic Opportunity for the City of Portland, and Holly Lasagna with Healthy Androscoggin. We hope you'll join our conversation at 1-800-399-3555. Elaine, earlier we were talking about the co-working center that you've recently opened. What are some of the other programs that you and those you work with are offering to new immigrants?
So one of the priority is English acquisition. I think one of the areas where I think it's okay to duplicate here in Maine or countrywide is language acquisition. So we have so many waiting lists over the country, and people say that people don't want to learn, the new Americans don't want to learn English is completely wrong. But there's so little capacity everywhere. So what we're trying to do is to innovate by investing in technologies for ESL instruction. So we're going to develop a digital language lab that will allow people to learn at their pace, to allow people to be speaking more than a traditional classroom. And we hope to develop this program in collaboration with existing partners in ESL so that we can learn together in the process and build a model that could probably be duplicated elsewhere and help more people.
Okay. Holly, we've been talking about Healthy Androscoggin, but you're here as part of the REACH partnership. What is that?
It is a U.S. CDC-funded program that brings together 8 local health and wellness providers and others to serve the diverse needs of the growing immigrant population, in particular African New Mainers, and we focus on helping to address the issues of chronic disease in African New Mainers. And the way we're doing that is through educating the providers and also educating New Mainers about accessing health care, and not just health care, but health and wellness, exercise and nutrition.
All right. And Julia, we're having this program right as there's going to be a big week at New Americans during Welcoming Week. This is beginning September 15th. Tell me about it.
That's correct. So Welcoming Week is an initiative that was brought together by Welcoming America, which is a national organization that that promotes this kind of work between the what we call the new arrivals and the I can't think of the name right now, the welcoming communities, I'm sorry. So Portland decided, the city of Portland, with my office being open on May 1st, as well as the hiring of our diversity and inclusion workforce specialist, to celebrate Welcoming Week and really bring about a series of programming that could highlight that Portland is a global city, that we're a city of neighbors, that we're stronger and more vibrant when we come together and celebrate. So there's going to be a world map at the City Rotunda, which is already City Hall Rotunda already in place. There's a naturalization ceremony that is going to take place at City Hall on the 15th at 10 a.m. And then we have partnered also with USCIS to have several points in the city where both immigrants that are going through the immigration process can actually ask specific questions related to their cases, or other neighbors can actually ask questions for these USCIS officers as to in regards to the immigration process. And then we're doing a lot of things also internally to the city and city staff in order to really improve our understanding within our workforce.
All right. We'll post some information about the Welcoming Week on the Maine Calling Facebook page. Go ahead, Elaine.
So I just want to add on the citizenship that we have a citizenship drive program where we want to promote citizenship. People get green cards, and actually, unless they come voluntarily to get citizenship, there's no campaign to push them to do that. We believe that we can't build an inclusive economy without an inclusive democracy. So we're doing this, and we are happy to partner with Seaport Credit Union, who has just started a citizenship loan program to alleviate the financial barrier to become a citizen for those who need that. And we hope to continue and partner with other institutions to really push this program.
Mm. Is that an issue in the immigrant community, that just getting the green card or whatever it takes to stay, as opposed to becoming a citizen, taking that extra step to become a citizen?
Absolutely. If you look at the numbers, for example, of people who register to vote, and there are so many communities in Lewiston, in Poland, that people are not even citizens. You would expect them to be citizens at this point.
Why is that? Do they not want to become citizens, or is it just one more thing to do? What's the issue?
For some of them, it's a financial issue because it costs a substantial amount of money for big families to get citizenship, and people are okay to stay with green cards. For others, it's a matter of education. About what that implies to become a citizen.
Hmm.
But with the current political climate, people have come to realize that unless you're a citizen, you always remain a second-class resident, or whatever it is. So we're encouraging people to get citizenship and be on the safe side with their families. And not only that, but also becoming citizenship is sometimes an economic issue because people are restricted to get some jobs because they are not citizens. And for me, at the end of the day, you have a voice. You do civic engagement. You have a say, even though it is a minority. But you need to have a say. Every resident should have a say in how their communities are led and what the programs exist.
We'll go to Cindy calling from Bath. Hi, Cindy. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for taking my call. I'm the executive director of Tri-County Literacy. We work in Saginaw, Lincoln, and Northern Cumberland counties. And about a third or a quarter of our learners are learners that are English language learners. And I just wanted to put it out there that we have free tutors that work one-on-one with people. And they are trained specifically to work with English language learners. It's a free service. It's confidential. And the tutors meet with the learners, you know, at their, they decide together where to learn, where to have their sessions. So it's usually in a public place, and it's designed to be geared towards the learner's needs.
Cindy, that's great that you called in, and I invite you to put information on the Maine Calling Facebook page so that others can access it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. We're going to move to Portland and Claude. Hi, Claude. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
Good.
Good. I'm very inspired by your program, by the way, and always when I come in on Maine Calling, I hear these wonderful people like Alain, Julia, and the others talking about the issue of the immigrants. And I was very interested, by the way, my name is Claude, and I'm the executive director of Community Financial Literacy. We are a small nonprofit that works with the new manners on financial education coaching and higher education as well. So the reason I was very interested in this topic is what makes the new manners thrive? And people talked about the issue of language acquisition and immigration workforce. But the other topic that really helps the immigrants is the understanding of the American financial system, which we do here, community financial literacy. We try to educate new manners to avoid any predatory lenders because they need to understand what they're signing in, what they need to do to be able to advance, how to manage their funds, how to start small businesses, and so on. So there are so many tools other than including taxation. There are so many tools that new manners, based on where they came from, the countries of origin, they may not be able to navigate on their own without the support. So it's very important that really people who are listening or those immigrants who are new who probably don't know about our program to be able to come to our services because we provide a workshop, we provide classes, we provide one-on-one coaching and counseling in the matter of finances, taxation, and small business management.
Claude, thank you so much for calling in and telling us about community financial literacy. And I invite you, as I have with others, to post information on the Maine Calling Facebook page. So if folks listen to the rebroadcast or down the road, look up this post that they can find information. Thank you so much. Let's see if we've got room for another call. We'll go to Steve in Orono. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Hi. Great show. So much good stuff. Yeah, in Orono, the international student organization puts on the Culture Fest every year. They've been doing it for over 30 years. And when I went back to school in 87, stayed in family housing, it was called the University Park. I don't know if you remember that, Jennifer, up on the campus of the University of Maine. And there were over up to 80, I think we counted, countries, families living in this University Park housing. There were 25% Mainers. And just to expand on one of your callers talked about is I always heard and still do with folks who are our friends from other countries that being immersed in the same living campus as Mainers or Americans was the most helpful. I mean, we ate, had potlucks, babysat each other's kids, tried to learn their language while they listened to us, went grocery shopping, knew my parents and my relatives well. It was, to them, even as people who are looking to go to college, who are going to college, brought their families with them, it was a tremendous experience for them, and I think for us, it was life-changing. But I don't know if there's any really mixed type of housing called the University Park, like the University Park did in Orono. It was just incredible. I mean, the kids went to the local schools, but the kids...
Well, Steve, we're almost out of town, so ask my guest, do you all know of situations like that where people from different countries intentionally live in communities together, buildings together? Or is it in Maine today just who happens to be your neighbor?
I think the idea of it's who happens to be your neighbor is my experience in Lewiston, and I go back to Fauci and all of us talking about treating your neighbors as if you were living in the same community together because you are, is how it really works.
Well, it's been a really interesting conversation, and I'm so sorry we're out of town time. You just heard from Holly Lasagna, Health Promotion Manager at Healthy Androscoggin. Elaine Nahimaha is also here. He's Interim Executive Director for the Greater Portland Immigrant Welcome Center. And Julia Trujillo Luengo is Director of the Office of Economic Opportunity for the City of Portland. If you emailed or tried to call in and were not able to get through, please put information about your organization on the Maine Calling Facebook page. We hope to use that as a resource. Nikki Shields ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling at mainecalling.net. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and by Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, the aftermath of the Equifax hack and answers to your questions about the importance of your credit score, how it works, and other personal finance issues. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.